You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the co-host of this lovely podcast and back for 5 days a week for the first time in the 2019-20 season. It's Tony East. Tony, so we're back. Third year doing this.
Back.
Excited? Not excited? What's the...
Well, how could I be not excited?
I don't know.
How could I be not excited?
I don't know.
I thought maybe the best days. This means basketball is back. We have one more preseason game to get through, and then it's time. We are here.
I didn't know you were that excited about the podcast. I thought maybe you were getting pessimistic about it. I'm just kidding. I'm just messing with you right now.
Of course I'm excited.
I'm just giving you crap right now.
Yeah. You also excited about it, Adam? Roster moves. And the Pacers made a bunch this week.
Yes, they did. I think that's more exciting than our podcast going 5 days a week.
Yes, it is. It's really stuff that they did.
All right. You want to walk us through at least the first two?
Yeah. The first two, Adam will lob to me because they're minute. And, yeah, I'm the master of the minutiae roster moves. So the first thing they did is they waived Jakeenan Gant, who – you don't know anything about Jakeenan Gant. That's because he's never played in the NBA before. He was a Sun Belt Defensive Player of the Year last year. He was never going to make the Pacers, but he had an Exhibit 10 deal, which means they just want him to be on the Mad Ants. So them cutting him, the timing didn't really matter as long as he's reports to the Mad Ants at some point. But they cut him so they could have a roster spot to sign a guy named Walt Lemon, who they signed like 2 hours after cutting Gant, because they want Walt Lemon on the G League team too. And Lemon played for the Bulls last year for a little bit, but he was on the Mad Ants 2 years ago, and he was an All NBA G League player, so he's one of the best G League guys. They wanted him back.
Yeah. So in 3 years, Walt Lemon is averaging 18.7 points in the G League. So just look that up for everybody.
Yeah, man, he's a beast. He just kills it down there.
Yeah. Besides the 3-point shooting, he's a pretty good player for the G League.
Yeah, he can score. He was good for the Bulls. He scored 14 points a game for the Bulls last year in like six games. He's not.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's like one of the best guys who can't make the NBA, which sucks, but he's good.
Didn't that Jakar Sampson score 20 a game for the Bulls last year? Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, Jakar was in the same boat. He's like literally in the same path as Walt Lemon. I should ask them about each other. The other two moves, Adam, which you talked about the Leaf one on Friday, were much more significant.
Yeah, I think we should do the Leaf one again because I don't get your take on it. I think we have a similar take, but they picked up Leafs $4.3 million option. I think neither of us were surprised by that.
Yes, move. I have takes, but my takes are similar to yours, but I also have an insight thing I want to talk about with it.
Okay.
So let's do two insight things I want to talk about. So the Pacers picked up TJ Leaf's fourth-year rookie option, and they picked up Aaron Holiday's third-year rookie option. The Aaron Holiday part we can talk about in two sentences. That was a no-brainer. They were obviously going to do that. He's good. Do I need to say anything else?
Maybe he's good. We'll find out this year.
Yeah, let me phrase that. He's promising enough that it's a no-brainer. With Leaf, I understand why there's wavering thoughts on both sides, because he hasn't shown anything, and why keep that guy? So me and Adam are on the line of they don't have cap space anyway, so might as well keep him. There's no point of not. Even if he's terrible, they can just cut him and have the roster spot anyway and get the same thing they would have if they just didn't pick up the option. So like,
yeah, and there's value in that $4.3 million salary from trading. That's just the only value.
Yeah. It made all the sense in the world salary cap-wise and team building-wise to keep him. And you didn't gain anything by cutting him. And, you know, I think another difference that we miss sometimes with, like, Salo Hill. Like, so I think they learned the lesson with Salo, too, because he got good in the year after they declined the option. But, like Salo wasn't a bad locker room guy, but he was just, like, kind of there. Whereas, like, Leaf's actually a good teammate and, like, communicates with the coaches and front office and stuff. Like, that matters. You know, like, you're going to give that guy a chance over the Solomon Hill guy.
Well, the Salo Hill thing, too, has two sides of it, too. One, it was a Larry Bird move, which you take for what that means. It was probably the thing that motivated him to actually become the player that he became because he was.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good
point. He was notoriously lazy, out of shape, and like not giving a shit.
There's a reason they declined it. There's a lot of reasons.
Yeah, not giving a shit. And then once that happened, all of a sudden he didn't play the first 30, 40 games. And then the last 30, 40 games of the year, that year, he was all of a sudden like the most lights out shooter in the NBA.
So I'm going to explain the cap part a little more. I think Adam touched on it a little on Friday, but basically, since they're already so close to the salary cap next summer, they're acting as an over-the-cap team. So if they cut Leaf, they're still acting as an over-the-cap team. Like them getting rid of his $4 million of salary doesn't mean they'll have $4 million to spend. So instead, they'll just have a roster spot. So basically what that means is even if they don't want him next year, they could just cut him anyway and have that roster spot. So they might as well at least like have him a shot to be on the roster. The only person who would suffer in that instance is Herb Simon, which he'd be mad, but I mean, you're not shooting yourself in the foot if he becomes good in the instance that they have. So given their cap situation, it made all the sense to keep him.
Right, because they're at $106 million right now without a Sabonis extension, which is
exactly
looming at some point. So, whether it happens next summer or not is going to be somewhere
in the 15 to 20 range. We're going to talk about a Sabonis extension later, but one of the two bits of insight I want to offer with this Leaf thing is I actually think, you know, if you thought you were going to extend Sabonis and you knew for sure you'd be at or over the cap, it makes more sense to keep Leaf. Not that I think that, like, them picking up Leaf's option means it's more or less likely that a Sabonis extension gets done, but I think they'd have more confidence picking up Leaf's option if they thought they were getting a Sabonis deal done. So I think that that would tick me up by like 2% in the confidence meter that they're going to get an extension with Sabonis.
What? I actually don't think that matters, right? Because no matter what, he's restricted next summer. So even exactly. No matter
they
what,
they can keep him no matter what.
Yeah, like they control him returning to the team. Basically, if they don't.
So the other thing I want to talk about with Leaf here, this is kind of a recent development, right? So there was reporting from Keith Smith of Yahoo. He talked with some cap guys on teams who are anticipating the cap not going up at all next summer, even going down a little from lost revenue from China. And then 3 days later, the Pacers pick up Leaf's option. So I'm wondering if there's a factor here of like, if the cap doesn't go up, they definitely won't have cap space. And then for sure it makes sense to keep Leaf. So I wonder if that's at play here. I don't know that. And that's just like speculation given the news timing. But I mean, that wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, so before the whole China incident happened, and we can touch on that whenever we want to, if you want to go further than that.
It's not. Everyone's read and heard a million things about it.
Yeah, I mean, people should just read up on the situation if they want to get their own opinion.
Ethan Strauss of The Athletic has the best stories on it, if you want to.
Yeah. Anyways, so even before that happened, we assumed they were going to pick his extension up, right?
We did. We both said they would pick it up.
Like, I think we would have put it at like 99% chance.
Maybe
95. I mean, somewhere in that 90s, right?
Like 80.
Okay. I mean, I had just.
And he hasn't been good. Like, that's the reason to say no. But there were way more reasons to say yes than no.
Yeah. But if you take it as one, it's a salary that's less than like the mid level accepted. So basically, you're paying for a mid level guy. And are there that many mid level guys like that much can add that many more minutes to TJ Leaf? No, considering the upside.
They're mid level guys who are a first round pick in your own organization that you already are familiar with? No.
Yeah. Or who have the upside that Leaf could have theoretically. None of them have that upside. The other part of it is if you look at the cap, right? So next year, it was what, 110 this year? Even if it was not going to go up next year, or even, whatever it was going to do, it didn't matter what the cap was going to do. They were still going to be over the cap, assuming the bonus makes $18 million, like the average.
Right.
Like it really doesn't matter whether the cap was up or down. It's not going to go up enough where they're going to be able to make up. Like, they already have 106 committed next year, so if the cap went to have to go to like 120 something for even them to have the extra $4 million
meaningful room, right?
Yeah, and it's not. I think it's going to like put it at 117 before the
currently. And this is what we're talking about too, with picking up Leaf and Holiday. Now they're at 10 guys already guaranteed for next year. That's Vic, Brogdon, Turner, Warren, Lamb, McDermott, Goga, TJ Leaf, Aaron Holiday, and Edmund Sumner. That's 10 guys at 101, or excuse me, apparently I might have clicked. Oh, yes, $101 million already.
I will say one thing this could affect is this put them in the
luxury. That does not include Sabonis, whose cap hold and or salary is going to be quite large.
If the cap actually goes down next year, or let's say it's set at like 105, does it actually put them in the luxury tax range, which is another thing to discuss.
Right. Because no, they won't. I would not worry about the tax.
Well, no, but think about it. So if the cap went down to 105, if 106
even if the cap's 105, the tax would be like 130. They won't get close to that.
Isn't the tax 20% usually?
No. 120? Like,
yeah, it's 120% of
the tax salary. Right now at 109 is $132 million. They would not
get is 120%.
No, it is not 120%.
If it's at $132 million, 120% of 109 is 130 something.
I don't know what the exact cap
is. It's 120% of salary cap, Tony. I don't know.
I'm going to do some quick math and determine that it is 121.5%.
Right? Okay, so whatever. It's close enough. That's what I'm saying. It's usually 100. It's somewhere between 120%. I told you.
Yeah, 120% of 107 or whatever you just said is like.
So, for example, if the cap was at 105 next year, it would be at like somewhere between like 127. And if you take the salaries they currently have and you add Sabonis to 20 million,
and Sabonis is not making 26 million.
No, but they're at I guess you take off his four already guaranteed.
They're not sniffing the tax.
It's not going to matter too, because they only hit it for 1 year. And if you hit it 1 year, you don't pay it to actual tax. Right. Isn't it repeaters when you have to pay luxury, whatever it is. Like the real but penalty is repeating.
Bonus extension. So now that we have Leaf done and Holiday done, and I mean, we might see like a few more waivers for the G League guys. I mean, we'll talk about them, but they're not like big moves. Everything is done for the summer except for Sabonis extension. So That'd be the only big roster move they would make the rest of the year.
And what's the date for that? You said the day before the season?
October 21st. So they have a little over a week. It's the Tuesday that the season starts.
So if you had to give it a percent happening right now, do you think he gets extended before the season?
I think it's like 60-40. And the 60 is that he does get it done.
I think I would. I put it 50-50. I mean,
it's so close. Yeah.
So
I can live with 50-50.
I don't really see the incentive for him to do that, I guess, right? Isn't there? I guess there's shrinking. There's not much cap space next summer, but there's enough, and he'll be one of the more.
The incentive for him to do it is that he really wants to stay on the Pacers, and I understand why he would say no because he's playing out of position and stuff like that. But if he genuinely likes it, I don't think that's the incentive.
No. I mean, I think the incentive really is, do you want the cash now or the guaranteed cash now?
He'd be like one of the best free agents next summer.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why I don't see the incentive. He'd be one of the best free agents. Maybe there's not limited cap space on this offseason, but he would be one of the best. And it's hard. There's a way if he had even just a decent year, team saying, well, he played out of position. He was great when he was in position. Why don't we give him 5 for, 90 to 100 range? I could see that. I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility. And that's where the Pacers are not
– makes sense. But yeah, I get why A, the Pacers wouldn't offer that right away, and I also get B, why Sabonis might not accept that right away.
So. Well, the Pacers are in no spot where they should offer really more than 4 for 72, to be honest. Right. They just don't have to, and they shouldn't. Now the question
is, they can keep him for sure if they need to next summer, no matter what. So.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know why they have to. They don't have to. Unless they want to give him to a 5-year extension, that's the only reason to wait, too, if they want to give him a 5-year deal.
They're the only team that can offer that, right?
Yeah, and that's next summer, too, right?
Do you have anything else on the roster moves?
I think the other thing to look at with just the TJ Leaf move in general is it's kind of like when you're a team and you want to make a move eventually, and not that you're going to trade anybody now, you need to have a range of salaries, right? So you can't just be top heavy with guys because then you can't move some or low salaries like the Celtics were a few years ago because then they couldn't put enough together to go after a player, right? So you have to have this range of
versatility
like
is key.
5 to 10 to 15 to $20 million guys. And what Leaf's contract does is puts in that $4 million that you could easily package into it. So let's say you're $4 million off in a salary for a guy that's like making $30 million, and let's say you were going to throw in a Turner, so bonus is like an 18, and Lamb or Warren, whatever, and you could add in Leaf to get to that point. So that's where the salary is useful. It's really just a pretty valuable trade asset in general because it's an extra player making extra money.
Former first-round pick, still in his rookie deal. That will never be negative in the deal.
And worst case, if you really need to get off the salary, like let's say some crazy way the cap goes down so much, and you get off the salary, they have three second round picks. Put one to that, and I guarantee you can be in Atlanta next week.
Yeah, you're fine. It's not crippled. There's no way it's crippled.
Yeah, and it's less than 4% of the salary cap. Less. I mean, that's
exactly. You are all over it. And I think people get I think people get why it makes sense to keep him. It's just that he hasn't done anything, and he wasn't good in his debut, which we'll talk about in a second. But yeah, I get why people are like, ugh, but like it made all the sense in the world.
Yeah, I mean, especially because he's still part of that depressed wage first round pick scaling, rookie scaling.
Yes, right? He was the last draft that was not crazy high.
This is just for like reference. I mean, for example, Sabonis is making $3.5 million this year, so I mean, these rookie contracts from at least the last like 4 or 5 years, because of the way they set up the rookie cap on draft picks has been great for teams in terms of they can get a young player. It's sort of like the NFL with a young quarterback kind of thing, where if you get a cheap guy, it's good in his third year. You can have all this cap room after a guy. The Sixers are a great example of that, where for a while, that's how they were able to get Butler essentially, because they weren't paying Simmons or Embiid anything.
Exactly. And they got Al Horford this summer.
Yeah, all because you had good young players cash in early.
Deals kicks in next year. Yep.
No, and that's why the holiday extension option is interesting, because you need those cheap young players to outperform. So picking up him is hopefully a bet that he'll become something that's worth that.
He's already worth what he's getting.
Yeah,
no big deal. Let's talk some Bulls, Adam.
Yeah,
we should talk some Bulls.
Let's do it. Welcome back into Locked On Pacers podcast. All right, Tony. So the Pacers are undefeated in the preseason so far. Woo! Does that mean anything? I'm going to ask you a question for you before you even answer it. No.
No. No, it does not. I'll tell you the one thing that means something, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So over at B-Ball Index, the lovely place, they did a study on what does matter from preseason. And the answer, like Adam just said, is essentially nothing. But there is one thing. There was one stat out of every stat that actually had some predictive power from preseason to regular season, Adam. Do you know what it is?
Ooh, I want to say it's like
on a team scale.
3 points attempted per game?
It is 3 points attempted. That is
crazy. Really?
Yes, because
That's a quick shot in the dark.
This makes sense. So just think about it. Like, if your team style isn't going to be something that, like, fluctuates so much, you know? So that kind of makes sense to me. And they shot 34 in this game against the Bulls. And granted, the Bulls' coverage was, like, stop every post action with Turner Sabonis. So they got perimeter shots. But they also had 28 against the Kings. And, they all three games they've taken more than last year. Not significantly, but more. So I think my first takeaway seeing that 34 number is that they actually might be a team that takes more threes than last year. I'll be damned.
So I have a two-part answer for you. So one's a question at the end of it. So one, that's surprising considering the players they signed, right?
They did add guys who can gun, yes.
And they're expecting more three-pointers out of Turner, and they brought in just a lot of guys who can shoot threes. And if Holiday plays more, he'll bring more three-point shooting than Corey Joseph, for example, off the bench as the backup point guard and like that. And then the other option, other side of this is, do we expect Sabonis to take – more than 4 threes? Yeah, exactly. I mean
– those two he took two possessions in a row were bad.
Yeah, so he took 4 threes. Is that the most he'll take if we include races and preseason all year?
No.
I mean
– yeah, probably. He took 17 on the list.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that'll be his max is four. Right. I mean, if he takes four a game, that'll be the most he takes a game. Once he hits four of them, then he might take a fifth one for a heat check
moment. You have a point there. Yeah, but still, like, I'm looking at the Kings' games too. You know, it's not just a one game sample here.
No, they're definitely shooting more threes as a team, right? I'm gonna pull the last year, but I believe last year they were more like in the 20s.
24.
Right, so 24 this year. They're.
What I have off the top of my head, I might be wrong.
I'm trying to pull it up.
I think it's mid 20s. I know that's right.
So 3-point attempts per game was last year. Oh, well, they had a lot. They ranked – oh, my God. I hate people reffing there. They ranked them for how many they did. I went per game. All right.
You're better than this, Adam. This is easy. It's 24.7. That's
I think you're right
on
there.
This is embarrassing. How do you not know this?
I honestly –
why? How do you not know how to use basketball reference? Do you host a podcast?
I do know how to use it.
Answer is 25.4. It's right in front of me.
You put too much pressure on me in the moment. I was not ready for it.
25.4. Stop looking. Okay. More than that, all three preseason games, they've been hitting a respectable percentage of them. Finally, in this Bulls game, Adam, by the way, Brogdon hit his threes, which he didn't do in his first couple games, which I was excited about. And they were moving the ball around to get him those shots. They had one possession where he ran a pick and roll with Sabonis, then Sabonis threw it to Warren in the corner, and then Warren threw it to Turner on the wing, and then Turner threw it to Brogdon. It was awesome. It was beautiful. They were throwing the ball around. They had like 30 assists, I think, exactly. Or they had 26 assists. They were throwing it around.
Yeah, they have better creators, right, for their points just this year, theoretically,
they do.
Too. They've got guys Brogdon alone probably, what, contributed to two or three extra threes per game just because he can create openings by cutting in the lane and drawing defenders.
The two-man action he's been doing with Sabonis has been really good so far.
I mean, that might be like the number two scoring option for the Pacers behind Vic when he comes back,
It's number one for a while. Well, okay. So I actually heard from a few people that Warren is popping in practices and games, and we've seen that. He's been good. And he can shoot. And like, so he's probably the option, right?
Well, so before this iteration of the team they have, I think it's fair to say the Pacers' best option when it came to the crunch time was Vic with the ball, make something happen. Then it was what?
Yeah. Sabonis, Vic, pick and roll or something?
Yeah, I would be almost thinking like a Turner pop action, Turner maybe. Pop maybe.
Yeah.
Or somehow get the ball in Bojan's hands kind of action.
They have a lot better options than that.
But like they were all sort of like if you would say 1 and 1A and 2B, they're like 6B options. Like they're not even like anything. Most teams would be like, ooh, that's like going to maybe go.
That's,
like,
that's harsh but fair.
No, but like I'm trying to think, how many times at the end of a game when there were a couple games where Bojan just missed shots at the end of games because it was just so hard to get him into that, like he's hitting fadeaway two-pointers. It just might go in. They might not. I guess Collison was probably the other option, just to get him the ball like off an action. But now it feels like there's like, okay, well, Vic is going to double team Vic. Well, there's Warren. Boom. He can get the ball to him, he'll make a play. Or get the ball to Brogdon, it's a bonus. And we'll just like three or four things where it's like we can run this action and expect it to succeed. We don't run the same thing over and over again. One, tiring out our superstar, which may have led to injury. And two, keeping teams on their feet at all times of who they have to guard. And
they weren't really like beating a drum. Like Jeremy Lamb led the team in assists of all people in this game. You know, they had five from Lamb, four from Brogdon, four from Sumner, four from McCoy, like three from Sabonis, three from Turner. Like everybody is getting involved in these actions.
Yeah, I mean, I think if
they have way more options than last year.
I think if the chemistry is there, we expect this team to be really good because it's a well-constructed team versus a lot of guys. Probably
not
seven
really good, but pretty good.
No, but seven or eight guys who legitimately could start on a team.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, with Vic, I'm counting with Vic back. I mean, but there's probably seven guys you would say could start on an NBA team if, well, maybe what? Lamb six. Is six. And then
six.
I guess I jumped the gun thinking there was one. Aaron Holiday is the iffy. We'll see how he becomes good. That could, you're right. So this guy who would start an NBA team and three other guys who would be the top bench guy on a team, maybe. Or at least one of you guys would be the top bench guy.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know where you're going with this, so I'll just say sure.
I mean,
they have more options. I think that's the takeaway. Like, even if you look at just shots attempted, I mean, Brogdon only took four shots, which is kind of crazy. But like, every other starter took 10 shots. McDermott took 10 shots. Like, they really spread it around.
Somehow got 14 points out of those four shots. That's
14 points on four shots.
And they're all threes. So, I mean, that's the most efficient.
That's the most Brogdon stat line of all time. I mean, 75% shooting, 75% on threes, 100%.
Could you imagine if he took like eight shots a game and scoring 15 a game on eight shots? Yeah. Like, I could just, and then that way everyone's getting a ton of shots for some reason.
So we have to do a negative really quick. Turnovers were a disaster. They had 27 turnovers, more than their assists.
Yeah, a little loose with the ball, I would say.
Sloppy ball handling. Like, I know, obviously, you're not really A, inspired, or B, care, because it's preseason and you're playing the Bulls B team, but the 27 turnovers is a mess. That is awful.
Yeah, let's see. In my head, they had a negative assist to turnover ratio.
They did. They passed the ball well, and they still had a negative assist to turnover. That's a mess.
I have another negative. It's less on the players, but.
Okay, go ahead.
I mean, it's an obvious one, but like, why are the starters playing? Why Sabonis playing 31 minutes in a preseason game?
Yeah, well, Nate says that he has two reasons for that. One is they have a shorter training camp because of the India trip. I believe that. Okay, yes. You need to get more rhythm with your training camp cut in half. Two is that they have a lot of new guys. So he's trying to get them more reps together. I also believe that. Those arguments are fair. But I'm going to side with you here in that these games don't matter at all and that you should not play them this many minutes.
Yeah,
play the rotation like in the first half and then the second half, you should not.
And if you think about it too,
Sabonis, go with the young guys and stuff.
Sabonis played 31 minutes most of any Pacer. Yeah, I think the most of any – well, tie for the most player, of any right? player. I think Gafford got
– Yeah, the Bulls played their JV team and he played more than anybody on their team.
Yeah, and he's what crossed the Atlantic or the Pacific Ocean at least twice in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So exactly. I mean, maybe Sabonis because he's from Eastern Europe and just can travel and is a great traveler or whatnot and just is fine. But I would imagine he's a little jet lagged.
This is not like a defense of McMillan. This is just like a fact. It's just like without Goga, they're kind of stuck. You know, like they had a front court of Leaf and Jakar Sampson at one point. Like they have to have someone play like center.
I mean,
so kind of stuck in that way.
But like in the preseason games, so really they could do whatever the hell they wanted to. Like you could play anybody at center. I mean, you could have. They didn't play Alize. You ever find out why they didn't play Alize?
They didn't play Alize. They put Bremen in with like 2 seconds left. Like
if they really wanted to, they needed the win. It doesn't matter. You could have just
It's preseason. That doesn't matter. Also,
you could have played Alize at center for God's sakes.
Another reason he's playing 31 minutes is this. Is that good? No, but it's
no. That's a your his first two reasons were much better than what you just said. That's like that's probably the worst reason. Oh well, shut up. Because we had to.
I added bad context.
For God's sakes, you could play Edmund Sumner at center if you wanted to. And Prince Gibbon.
Hey, let's talk about Ed. I'm glad you said that.
I know. He's probably the biggest revelation this preseason. Probably
Ed is the sixth man. Where did this come from? There was a hot second where I thought he wasn't even going to play. He's going to be behind Justin Holiday.
So
now he's the sixth man.
You don't know where he's coming from, but you have been the biggest Ed stan in the entire planet for the past 2 years.
I'm a huge Ed fan. I know. That should tell you a lot about what I think of Justin Holiday, that I thought Holiday would play above him. But, yeah, it's been awesome. And he only had 10 points on 5 shots in this game, and he was the sixth man in both halves. Like, it wasn't a fluke in the first half. So, obviously, when Vic's back, Lamb will bump Sumner somewhere. But, yeah, he's the first guy that subs in. Like, what the heck, man? And he's playing really good. I'm happy for him.
You've been such an Ed stan that I remember, I think, like, one of the first podcasts we did, you were talking about, oh, this guy's going to be good. Just wait to come back from his ACL. Like 2 years ago or whatever. So, I'm surprised you're surprised.
He played one game that year, and I was like, I just know.
I'm surprised by your reaction to this.
I just didn't think they'd be like, yes, we're going to give the full room exception to Justin Holliday to put him as our like depth guard who won't play like that. That surprises me. I mean, it's happened before though, Quinn. I shouldn't be surprised, but I mean,
they just were like, who's the best?
I'm just an idiot, basically.
Oh, they basically were like, who's the best guy we get for that MLE? And he was probably the best one available
he was. That is facts. He was.
I mean,
I just said that is facts. I should be fired from hosting a podcast ever again. But Ed was good. Like that, even beyond just like he is the sixth man, you know, 10 points on 5 shots is good. He's distributing. We talked about his 4 assists earlier. Like he's doing good stuff.
Yeah, I think it'll be exciting to see if he is translated to the regular season. Does he right. come out
and
first?
That was my anecdote. Like now that he's playing a role he's more comfortable with, like he's not just like, okay, you're in the G League 2 days ago, go start and guard Clay Thompson. Like he knows the unit he'll be with. He knows his role. He'll be more comfortable.
He's arguably played better than more consistent than most of the starters for the preseason
so far.
He definitely
has.
I mean,
has been super, yeah.
Consistently. I mean, I think, you know, Warren, first game – and the preseason was pretty awesome for probably the best game
we've seen. Teens in points, but yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, but so now it's just waiting. I mean, now it's like you did it preseason. That's what you expect from a guy who's an NBA player who could be in the top 8 or 9 on a team. Now, can you translate? And if it does turn to the rest, then it's like, okay, what's the ceiling here? How far does this go? And it's perfect going back to our salary cap from the first time, but like he's a guy who makes $1 million or less than that, $2 million this year with like a scaling 2-1 and a 2-3 team. I think this could be like, if he's playing anything remotely in terms of rotation minutes, this could be the biggest bargain in the NBA.
Yes, it could be. All right, let's do some quick hitters, and then I have 2 things to talk about. McConnell's the backup point guard in this game because Holiday was sick, but I guess this is something that we were going to talk about more in depth. But Nate McMillan confirming, basically, on the stand at in the post game, you know, that he talked to McConnell when they signed him about what his role would be, and basically, like, he knows he's the third point guard and Aaron's a backup. So that's exciting. We both wanted that.
Yeah, I think we'll wait to see how Holiday does.
Not that McMillan's ever been one to, like, make drastic lineup changes, but, like, you know, if they have a guy. Like, if Aaron's not doing good, they have another guy.
Yeah, I mean, considering McMillan's – if the team is good enough where they're trying to compete for a playoff spot and they're in kind of that win-now mode they were last year, I could see if Holiday just becomes kind of a liability at times or kind of the shots he's taking, that if they just moved to McConnell at some point.
They can harness him to not come in and just chuck a shot right away.
But I wonder if McConnell is also motivation for him at the same time.
It is, yeah.
Where it's like we have a guy. It
never hurts to have competition at point guard.
Well, and it gives Holiday to say, hey, we have a guy who's like comp enough to play at times if you're not going to play well. So you have to come out there and pick your moments when you're going to take your 25-foot three-point shot that it actually works and you're actually going to have to be for a try and deep and stuff like that. And it might work. I mean, I think with Holiday, they sort of – made a commitment when they didn't trade him last year for Conley that they believed in him. So, you know, it's time for him to kind of pay up on that guarantee they made.
McDermott in this game was good. 14 points on 12 shots. He shot a lot. They were really trying to get him involved. McMillan called him, quote, one of the best movement guys off the ball I've ever seen in the postgame press conference. Jakar Sampson didn't play as much, but it looks like Jakar Sampson's pushing for minutes in the rotation, which is interesting. And we'll talk about the guy he's pushing for. Justin Holliday got in at the end. He was the 11th guy. I don't think he has a spot. Okay. Leafs debut, Adam.
Oh, I don't get it. McDermott comment?
No. Sorry.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Do you have a big take on him? He played fine.
I know. I was going to say the home game, he played well. I'm excited.
Yeah, home game, he shot well. That's what I like
to say. That's all I was going to say.
Leafs debut. 3-for-4. Looked kind of out of place at times. Not his best performance, but he was fine, I guess. I don't know. I'm an idiot for thinking he would be like popping because of what everybody was saying. But
hasn't he been hurt too? Are we sure he's even like 100% healthy yet?
He did not pop. He didn't miss very many shots, so I cannot belittle his offense if you go 3-for-4. Good job. That's good.
But I'm sure he was limited because of his injury. I mean, I don't.
Yeah, that's fair. They posted him up a lot. You know, he wasn't as much perimeter oriented. A lot of his touches were in the paint, which is interesting. And I forget which assistant coach it was last year called him like one of the better post-up players on the team. So, I mean, I think they believe in his post-game.
Well, I mean, I think from his colleges, he has some real touch around the rim. I mean, he has some ability just to like know where his feet are at and know how much power to put on the ball within that 5 feet.
Samson keeps playing well, pushing him for minutes. But yeah, TJ does have a post-game.
I think it's good. I mean, I think the best thing of the Pacers team was last year we had guys semi-competing for starting spots. Now we have people actually competing for
right.
backup spot, which is like a good thing to have.
McMillan's willing to make the switches. Like last year, it was clear that Ed wasn't working in the starters. He put Tyreek in the starters. That wasn't working. They brought in Wes Matthews. You know, that was all the changes we saw last year. Maybe I think we'll see more this year just because they have a lot more options.
Yeah, I guess the thing I'm thinking for starters was Sabonis Turner, but that never was competition. That was just sort of thing that was more outside that people.
We're talking a lot about one game. What a game of learning.
Yeah, I mean, most of it though, let's see, it turned into an actual regular season game. But
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in a little over a week. Timberwolves last preseason game on Tuesday. I don't really know if there's any insight about who's playing and how many minutes and stuff. Pretty much all I care about is if Goga plays, but I do not anticipate I don't really anticipate it. It seems like they'd be kind of rushing him if he's not even practicing at all. So
right now
it is a bummer not seeing him for this.
Let's be clear too. If we don't see Goga and let's say he's maybe ready for this season or not, they don't have a third center right now, which is, they really don't have a second center. Yeah,
they ran out the Jakar Leaf front court in this piece.
Which I know you were talking about kind of that, like, well, you can do anything, but now come winter season game, they actually do need a center. So like,
at some point, they have to
figure that out. Yeah. That's a bridge right, across in 2 weeks.
Let's preview a big season here, Adam.
Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to preview Victor Oladipo's season. Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. All right, Tony. So,
Victor.
Yeah. When do we think Victor Oladipo will actually suit up for the Pacers?
Gosh, I wish I had any insight on this. I just, like, they're so closed mouth about it that it's really hard to guess.
Okay.
Let me rephrase that. The fact that I just called it a guess is how you know that.
I got a question. This is the Mass Singer goes on for probably like another 6 or 7 weeks. Does he suit up before it's revealed who he is, the Mass Singer?
Maybe that's how they reveal it. Like on the Mass Singer, he takes the mask off and then he says, like, by the way, I'm playing tomorrow. Like something like that.
Yeah, I mean, if he wins, he might not be
showing. Hilarious at Media Day when someone asks him if he's the Mass Singer and he's like, why would I cover my beautiful face?
Yeah, but it's obvious. I mean, come on, guys.
We know it's him.
It's way too obvious.
Very obvious it's him. So my first like stab at it, just looking at the schedule, was December 15th. But that's like if their timeline is legit and stuff. And I have no idea when he's going to be healthy, which makes it hard. Like, I didn't know this about the Tony Parker stuff, but like when Tony Parker came back, apparently he rushed it and he regretted that. So apparently his timeline was unrealistic for us to expect. So I don't really know. It's my answer. I just don't know.
But also, Vic seems like he is pretty far along in the
process. He does look healthy. That's for damn sure. You know, he's running in practices and dribbling, and every video of him looks good. He was at the game. He was at this home game on the bench and in a beautiful blue blazer. So
let's say he plays, 45 games this year? Is that a fair number to give?
45 is the number that I usually put on stuff.
Right. So let's say he plays 45 games. That'd be like 9 more than last year, give or take a little bit.
Yep.
Nope. I think he played 36 last year. So if he plays 40, go ahead.
When I preview, sometimes when people ask me about like previewing the Pacers season or whatever, I'm like, it's kind of two seasons, right? It's the no Oladipo season. Can they be afloat or good? And preseason has looked good, but you know, how is that going to look in games? And then it's the Vic season, and they'll be pretty dang good for the Vic season. The question is, how many games does he play when he's back and stuff like that? But when you're looking at just Vic season, it's a lot harder because it's just one season of him coming back and kind of easing in. You know, he's probably not going to play back to back. He probably won't be playing the 32 minutes he played last year. There's just a lot. It's just a lot of stuff that's like, I don't know what to expect. And
so can I offer some optimism to this whole thing? So if Vic comes back, let's say December 15th is kind of the number, let's say he plays 45 games.
Let's do Christmas. Let's just say Christmas.
Think of this, whatever it is. It could allow him to sort of peak at a good time, because I feel like in the NBA season, sort of it's the up and downs, right? And by like game 82, it's kind of a slog, and then it's like kind of resetting stuff for the playoffs. But if you only play 40 games, you're sort of playing at that level and easing into it. So it could help him play better in the playoffs next year, simply because he'll have played less games, less minutes. And that's just honestly probably better to play less games and be young at your peak. And two, for the team, if they get off to a good start, which they have an easy schedule this year, it will help them when Vic comes in, because he'll add kind of a boost to that kind of usually what's like the January, February slog anyways. Kind of, I call it usually in baseball, I call it the dog days of summer, but it's the dog days of kind of winter in the NBA, where you're sort of like, you're a playoff team, you know, you're a playoff team, and you're just kind of trying to get through night after night to win against bad teams. So you need some kind of extra motivation, and that will help them do that too. So there's that possibility for him returning.
I think the hardest part for me when I think about him is, and we do this, I'm super guilty of this. It's like, okay, good team, and they get Oladipo back, like they're gonna be awesome. Like
a little bit.
What if Vic's not Vic? You know, I don't think he'll be like useless. Like even okay, let's look back at Oladipo's stats. I have this in front of me, and this is kind of blatant. Like second year Oladipo, right? Sophomore year, clearly not as good as he was last year. Okay. He averaged 17.9 points per game, which is 0.9 less than last year. Okay, 1.7 steals is the same. 4.1 assists, and he shot better from the field. That was his sophomore year. So yeah. Even worse Vic is like that kind of guy. Like, I think they'll still be good. I think what you'll really see is the drop in defense.
Okay. See, what I see differently between that second year Vic and the new Vic, or this kind of this year Vic, is just the
reading D's, man, like usage.
Well, me, it's the experience too. I mean, it's just the fact that even if he is a,
it's part of reading D's to me, but yes, I understand.
Yeah, yeah. I just mean he's, you know, that second year Vic, if I remember right, was, I don't want to call him the chubbier Vic, but I remember he wasn't the same kind of body weight he was. You know what I mean? And even if he doesn't have the same explosiveness that he had, you know, in 2017, 18, even like 80% or 90% of that explosiveness, he still has the ability on defense to just know where to be in better spots and know how to play. Like he just is a smarter player with 6 years of NBA knowledge. That's just something you can't replicate, and that helps because usually that's part of also being a good player is just being consistent at like a high or at a certain level, right? So like it's just every night Vic can bring like a dominating presence on D just because he knows where to be on the court at times. Like he can just outsmart people almost in a way because he's done it enough times. That's the thing too. Like, and so, and then it's also, if everything goes right, he's going to be surrounded by such a different cast that actually probably plays into his skill sets even better than the previous cast. True. And so will that help him because it'll accentuate his strengths, allow him to at times on defense rest because you don't have to guard the best player that Brogdon can, and will offensively will open the floor up to him. So even if he's only 80% of the speed, he has that extra foot of space or inches of space that he can use that little room to get to the rim.
That's also a good point.
So that's, and then you hope maybe the first 20 games he isn't there, but that as he gets more comfortable and healthier, that he will get back to full speed. And then if he hits that full speed by game 30, 40, going to the playoff, there's a real chance this could become something special.
Yes, that would be the greatest thing if he peaked going into the playoff. Yeah, that's all good points. And I think that is a good point that he'll have. You know, the different team around him certainly caters to him better. That's it's just so hard for me to know how good he's going to be, right? Like I cannot look at Tony Parker being 37 and be like, this is a good example.
No, but I think you can look at last year and see how he was definitely hobbled and still was a very productive player.
But he was an all-star. Yeah, he was very good.
So, I mean, if he's – and he probably won't be in pain, which is a key part of that, then it's the mental part of not being afraid to jump and all that kind of movements, which takes some time. Undoubtedly, at the same time, he didn't have as gruesome injury as some guys. I mean, this one was just simply that his, you know, I mean, it's not like I'm thinking Paul George gruesome level where it just took him a few years to get kind of used to. Ugh, that was just gruesome. And it seems like Vic, too, has the mentality where I feel like has an alpha dog mentality in a way. So kind of in the Russell Westbrook mentality, which is probably a good player he's probably learned from, who a guy who tears the ACL feels like or meniscus or has something, knee surgery every other year and still ends up coming out and being like, a crazy high volume, high intensity player. Yeah. So that's what you kind of hope is that he just, as long as he's mentally feels comfortable with himself, that he'll be as good because he can almost like use his past history of what he was able to do in the past with this like killer mentality that will almost like scare teams into like giving him opportunities almost in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be awesome. And I said it when I wrote about Brogdon that I thought Vic would have like the opportunity to roam on D, and I think that will help him just like with his workload management in games, just not having to guard the best guy. So I think that'll help too.
Yeah. So assuming he is what he was last year, that means a little bit kind of limited at times. What is his role, do you think, with this team? Actually, like, what, like, is it to be, you know, is it to be the shot creator? Is it to be the guy?
I think he's a tiny bit lower usage version of last year, right?
Is he a more off the ball mover then? I mean, are they letting the ball put,
that kind of happened last year. Like Collison still brought it up, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, are we talking about like is Brogdon controlling the offense, going into the lane, kind of creating the action versus
the fact that the Brogdon Sabonis actions work means, yeah, I think you'll see more of that even when Vic is healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I think assuming Sabonis can kind of continue to be a decent passer, I mean, that could be lethal at times because Sabonis can Yeah. If that whole action move and Vic can kind of just space out into a corner with nobody paying attention to him, he could just catch the ball in an open three and drain it, which would be huge.
That would be awesome.
Because, I mean, I can't remember in the last 2 years
he's
a single
money
time.
Money corner threes, too. He is money.
Oh, yeah, and I can't remember a time in the last 2 years where there's been a guy who actually, like, created an action without Vic being in it, and then he can actually, like, get the ball, like,
41.4% in the corners for his career.
What was his 2017 corner three? I mean, I remember that year he was, like,
2017-18, yeah, he's 58% that year.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they could have, like, they should just, like, try at their hardest to get him the ball in that corner spot because he would have hit
in
it every
time. In a Pacers jersey, his corner three-point percentage is 49.2.
Yeah, so, I mean –
nuts.
An incredible corner three-point shooter. I mean, yeah, that's
nuts figure.
So they should get him as many of those as possible. It's like that should be the ideal play design, is to get him the ball right there. I mean, I don't know why that, and that maybe that's what they are going to do now that they have the better player.
They can now. Yeah, have him try to create from over there. I don't know if that's the ideal role for him outside of just like him shooting a three itself, because I think he's better going downhill from the top of the key. But I think it'd be good to like ease him back in to have him over there a little more.
Yeah, I mean, I think using him off the ball, too, just would help, I don't know, get him more acclimated with guys, I guess, or just sort of, like, give him some, I don't want to say a break on offense because it's still some energy, takes some effort to actually move around screens and whatnot, but it just gives him less in the action and less focus. And then, I don't know, I mean, the key with the offense, too, is sort of creating plays where they're not that expected to happen at the same time, right? So, like, if you're moving Vic around constantly, defenses are constantly having to watch him. Or if they watch the ball, they can't do both, and then somebody somewhere gets an open shot or something, like an efficient bucket.
So this is one of our hardest guys to do this for. 45 games, Vic's stats are blank.
You want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay. You want? Yeah, go ahead.
You can go 17 points.
Okay.
So a little lower, but that's not like a bad 17 points. That's they have more guys who can score 17 points, right? Assists are a little up actually, because like I just said, they have a little more guys who can score. So 5.5 of those, but he'll be playing less minutes. Maybe I should be a little lower on these. 16.5 points, 4.7 assists, 1.5 steals, 4 rebounds.
Okay. In my mind, I had 24 and 4, and then it's like 1.5 to 2.
24?
No, 24 and 4. Oh, like 20 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists.
It's like, damn, dude. What?
No. Although, I mean.
Even All-NBA Vic was 23.
No. 20 points per game, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and like probably 1.5, maybe 2. I don't know how much. Maybe he's going to get more steals. I mean, steals are very, like, he could be the deflector and not get the steal. So, I mean, that's.
We don't record with our cameras on, but you would have died laughing at my face when you said 24.
I mean, I think is he's going to play less games, right? And I think he'll have a few games where he might get, like a high amount of points, start like in the 30s or 40 range as he gets healthier and has sort of some of those pop moments, and that will help kind of carry him up. I think if he's playing a full season, you might see. I mean, I don't know. If he's playing 82 games, I might have said 19 to 20, but I feel like he's going to have a couple games just because he's going to be kind of in that fixed back mentality. They're going to want to feed him at temp when he's gone on fire and stuff like that. So I could see him kind of. Yeah. I mean, if he plays 45 games, 20 a game is not that hard if he puts up a couple 40s in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. The only thing I wonder is, you know, his assist number is the one where I'm not sure on, because. Is there a scenario where he is just the point guard at times, and then there's all the stuff we talked about before Brogdon doing, it's just Brogdon. Him doing it, and then Brogdon's in the corner for 50 pass out for an open three. I mean, that's also what could happen theoretically too. So that's the only thing. I could see him like somehow getting up to like 5 or 6 assists, but I don't know how many minutes he's going to play and what his role is going to be in those minutes.
I agree. It's going to be very interesting. Very. I think it's so hard to predict the season for the guys.
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm just very optimistic that he will – not be in pain anymore, and that will be a key to him just
kind of. I'm very neutral. Like, my expectations are pretty low.
See, I feel like the team – so
not that he'll be bad. That would be misleading from what I just said. I think he will just be different.
I guess my thing is, when's the last time the Pacers have two players in the top 50? Has it been since –
They've had three. If Brogdon's really good, they might have three.
Well, I was counting Brogdon, to be honest. Oh, I was thinking Brogdon is closer to 50 than Turner is. What was Brogdon on that list? Like 60 something?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying like, I don't know. I was kind of Brogdon. Like, you know, what's something that had four guys in the top 60 in the league? I mean, it's been a while since that time.
And yeah, they have quite a nice storm of talent.
Yeah. I mean, it's just this team is definitely it's better. It's all about chemistry. Obviously, I mean, the last team just somehow that first year they just gelled. I mean, I don't know how. Maybe Pinellas is really good at developing that chemistry and that locker room unity. But
right.
if they
yeah, and that's the other Vic thing, right? Is he's the guy for that stuff.
Yeah, and he's great at that. I mean, it sounds like him and Brogdon like are just dying to play together. And I'm wondering when the cameras are off, what it looks like for them together on the court.
When after Brogdon's media availability in the locker room for the Bulls game, he said, "See you, fellas," and I thought that was awesome.
You act like I don't read your Twitter feed most nights.
I like the way that players interact with other players on the team. I think that dynamic is fun.
Ooh. Yeah,
Marina coming in at the end of the show. I got nothing else to say, but I would like to honorably mention Matthew is in the analytics department for the Pacers. I met him at Media Day and talked to him at the Bulls game. He's a fan of the show, and I wanted to just give him a mention here.
Oh, now you're going to gain some good brownie points for that one. Not to be mean to Matthew. Right there.
He's a nice guy. He's way smarter than me, so I love talking to people who are smarter than me.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell people we're back to 5 days a week. So
yes, we are.
As we just did the Victrola Depot season preview, Tony will have Sumner's preview for Monday. I'll have McConnell's on Tuesday along with the Wolves recap. I'll have Turner for Thursday. Tony will do Alizé for Friday. And then we will be kicking into gear for some games. That's all of them, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you are the two-way players and Alizé on Friday. Sorry.
Alizé, the two-way guys, and Jakar is Friday.
Oh, it's right. It's all those guys.
We thought end of roster guys, but Jakar has ruined that for us.
Yeah, so we're getting there. I mean, we literally our games start, what, the 24th? So 23rd. Sorry, 23rd. So yeah, we are we're getting close to the NBA, and so look for this podcast 5 days a week. Obviously, if you have not listened to all our player previews and catch them previously, just go on the Locked On Pacers Apple feeds. We're on Spotify, we're on Stitcher. Remember, if you get a podcast, so just you can go in our feed and see who we previewed before. I'm gonna pick any player you want to listen to. You can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers. You can follow Tony at TeastNBA, me at From Adam 5. We will see you guys tomorrow. Get excited.